today is the birthday of the world. That's what our ancestors said. They believed that Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Hashanah, the more Hebrew common pronunciation today, was literally the day the world was created. They believe the story in that Torah. How the universe, the earth, was created in 6 days, 6,000 years ago. That belief will be affirmed and declared today in traditional congregations as well as Reform congregations. They will read a prayer today during the sounding of the shofar, which says in Hebrew, calls Rosh Hashanah, Yahayom Harat Olam. They will say in those congregations that today is the birthday of the world. I have a secret for you. Today is not the birthday of the world. Science gives us an understanding of how the universe and the world came into existence. Known as the Big Bang, the universe exploded into existence over 13 billion years ago. The sound of that moment is still audible. There's a hiss that can be heard around the universe if you have the right equipment. And the universe itself is still expanding. And out of this grand explosion, stars and planets formed. And over billions of years, our planet came into existence. And over billions of more years, life as we know it evolved. Yet even this understanding of the universe and the earth, universe in particular, isn't complete. Astrophysicists continue to study and probe deeper in their understanding of this universe, while suggesting now that there may even be more than one universe. The scientific approach to the universe is grounded in nature, in the laws of physics, and frankly, in scientific notions that are stretched the imagination. And this Rosh Hashanah, we as modern people, we have a choice. We can celebrate today using the science of our ancestors, which has been proven wrong, or we can celebrate today embracing modern science, the modern scientific perspective. But before we do, it's important to consider, what's at stake? Does it really matter what we do here today? Does it really matter what we Jews say on Rosh Hashanah about how the earth came into existence? Does it matter what framework we hold as we celebrate and mark the beginning of the Jewish New Year? Well, there are people who say, of course, they're separate. Religion's one thing, we do that in the sanctuary, that's all we do here is religion. And science, that's something else. That's classrooms or in the lab, but the two should not be intertwined. We should keep them separate and apart. Those who hold this view believe that to allow science to influence religion is to a disservice to them both. And I could not disagree more. But before we sort of explore that, I want to make sure we're all on the same wavelength, page, how I'm using the word science and how I'm using the word religion. Science is about how. It's about how. About how things work, about how the universe came into being, about how human beings evolve. It's the how. But it's more than that as well. It's also an attitude and a process. The scientific attitude, it's a willingness and a desire to ask questions, tinged with a bit of skepticism. A sense that today's answers may be superseded by a new discovery. An attitude that is willing to accept that certainty is elusive. And it's a process. It doesn't rely on authority for answers, but it's an ongoing exploration of information that can be replicated and reviewed. Science demands information and data, and it recognizes itself as not being infallible. Science asks for correction. And because it's evidence-based, and not driven by authorities who cannot be questioned, science is democratic. Any person who can do the research, who can bring to bear the evidence, can put together the equations that demonstrate some understanding, can make a difference and have their voice be heard, even when it shakes the foundation of new ideas. The other side of the equation is why? Why? Why are we here? That's the religious question. And it's always harder to talk about and make sure everybody's on the same page about what religion is, because so many people come into a sanctuary and join services with preconceived notions of what religion is and what it isn't. For me, religion helps us make sense of our lives, our moral and philosophic framework through which we understand and interact with the world and with others. Rather than answering the question of how things happen, it explores the question of why. And in doing so, helps us to cope and address the complexities of life itself. While there are those who want to reduce religion to a narrow set of rules interpreted by ecclesiastical authorities, religion needs to be seen in a wider and broader context. And a more expansive and broad understanding of religion not only allows for the influence of science, but demands it. Without science, religion becomes tales of old, told to support ideas and rules that are not allowed to be questioned, and conformity is demanded, and anyone who's questioning is called a heretic. In discussing this topic with a friend of mine, Rabbi Rami Shapiro, a colleague and an author, we got into a series of email exchanges, and he wrote me at one point this. He said, Religion is the way we make meaning out of reality. Science is the way we discover just what that reality is. Up until the modern time, we have had the luxury, steeped either in ignorance or deliberate blindness, of making meaning without referring to scientific reality. Today, we have to do better. And I agree, we have to do better. To say words or to act in a sanctuary, any sanctuary, that flies in the face of what science knows to be true about the nature of the universe, is short-sighted and ultimately harmful. Religious ideas, philosophy, prayers, words, thought that is uninformed, that believes that ideas from a different time are more religious or are more authoritative or more authentic than the best inquiry that we have today, reveals a short-sightedness. And it's ultimately self-destructive. Our ancestors believed that. They believed the science of their age. And their science informed their religious feud. What they believed about how informed what they believed about why. It needs to be understood that the earth at the center of the universe is described in that book. Wasn't just some notions of biblical authors dreamt up. That was the best science of their age. Ptolemaic astronomy. It took 500 years to finally come to coalesce, and it ruled for 1,300 years, dominated the scientific world. That the Earth was the center of the universe. And during the Middle Ages, when they were beginning to be challenged about that, what did they do? They tried to stop the challenges to science. Why? Because they understood that to challenge the why, challenging the how, challenge the why. If you challenge science, you challenge religion. And worst, you challenged religious authorities. The earth at the center of the universe was more than a geographic claim. It was an assertion that the known universe swirled around us, that we were at the center, that we are the point of creation. Scientific challenges to the location of our planet and the universe was not just challenging where we were located. It was challenging our importance and the entire point. If we're not the center of the universe, if we're not at the center of it, then perhaps creation wasn't about us. Maybe the purpose of the universe wasn't human beings. Maybe we're just one more random event in a universe full of random events. And today, people who claim the ancient science, be them ultra-Orthodox Jews or the creationists over in Kentucky or fundamentalists of every ilk. Whatever they claim the ancient science, they also claim the moral authority of that ancient world, and they say it's true for all time. But we know better. And when I say we, I mean modern people. We know better. Or at least we should. Steven Pinker, professor at Harvard University, wrote an essay recently called "Science is Not Your Enemy." I want to paraphrase the opening paragraph, part of his paragraph. He said, "We know, but our ancestors didn't know, that human beings belong to a single species of African primates that developed and evolved. We know, but our ancestors didn't know, that our species is one twig in the geologic tree that embraces all living things almost 4 billion years ago. We know, but our ancestors didn't know, that we float around one star in a galaxy filled with 100 billion stars. We know, but our ancestors didn't know, that our galaxy is just one galaxy of 100 billion galaxies out there in at least the universe that we can see. In other words, we have an understanding of the universe and the nature that our ancestors didn't have, and this provides us with a framework in which we are called upon to develop the why, a contemporary religious response to give meaning and purpose to our lives. For some, this is incredibly frightening. The certainty of religious authority gives way to the uncertainty of new discoveries. Patricia S. Churchland wrote in a book recently, touching a nerve, "Reality doesn't care if you don't like the way it's put together. You can fight reality, hoping your fantasy will prevail, or you can decide to make peace with reality and come to like it." It's time for us to face reality as science reveals it so that we can make it part of the religious enterprise and thus make our religious experience more meaningful and more useful. The best science and scientists of our age should not be ignored. We need to listen to what the Dalai Lama said. The Dalai Lama wrote, "If science proves some belief of Buddhism wrong, then Buddhism needs to change." So I'm going to change it. I'm sure the Dalai Lama will give me permission to do this. I didn't call him, I didn't write him, but I'm sure he will. That for us as Jews on Rosh Hashanah, if Judaism conflicts with science, Judaism should change. And I'm going to say something else. If what we say in services conflicts with science, it's the service that should change. We should talk in words that are clear. A scientifically illiterate Judaism becomes increasingly irrelevant to modern people. I spend more time at meetings listening to people talking about the Jewish future. Will there be a Jewish future? Will it exist? I can't tell you that. I'm not going to be able to answer that whole question, but I can tell you one thing for certain. A Judaism that ignores science, that talks as if we live 1,000 or 2,000 years ago, that will be irrelevant. And I clearly think it will be insular and isolated, and clearly people won't be drawn to it. But more than that, an out-of-touch Judaism, a Judaism that keeps its head in the sand, I'm embarrassed by it. It's not what I would want my own children, my grandchildren, or the children that I teach here to inherit. Our ancestors didn't have a choice. We do. They didn't have a systematic way to probe nature and build upon that knowledge, but we do. And to reject knowledge in the name of tradition is to shackle Judaism to the past and ensure that is where it will stay. Stuart Kaufman, the director of the Institute of Biocomplexity and Informatics at the University of Calgary, used a phrase that I happen to like. He called reinventing the sacred. That's what we need to do. We need to build a Judaism that reinvents itself, reinvents the sacred, a Judaism that is not afraid of science. And I know, sure, everyone likes saying, well, in our adult education classes, we talk about this. It's not just in the other rooms that it needs to be talked about. It needs to be talked about in every sanctuary. And here we've done that. That's why the windows behind me are the Big Bang, and the windows behind the choir are the evolution of our planet, and the windows on the other side are science, and our eternal light is DNA. We need to make our religious voices, our art, our services reflect the reality that we know. And this afternoon, if you come back for our service for all ages, we're going to have a planetarium in the library for our students to go into. And somebody said, oh, that's cute. It's a way to bring people to services. Well, I hope it brings people to services. I don't deny that I like having people at service. But it's more than that. I don't want our children to actually believe that today's the birthday of the world. I want them to have a Judaism informed by how the universe came into being, to see its majesty, its wonder, its complexity, and its richness, and to know that we have a voice that incorporates that into who we are and what we're becoming. It's when we come to peace with reality that we build a sounder religious system that enables us to cope with the complexities of living. It's then we can focus on those grand questions of life and of death. What is our purpose? When science reveals that no purpose is hidden in the laws of nature, then we have to create a purpose. We have to create meaning. When we come together and know today is not the birthday of the world, we come to see ourselves as part of a remarkable and majestic universe that is unaware of our presence. And that's what we have to ask ourselves on Rosh Hashanah. How will we make the new year better? How will we engage ensuring that what we leave to future generations is worth inheriting? Entering a sanctuary, joining together in services, if we are honest, demands that we face reality about our place in the cosmos, about the nature of what it means to be human, about the nature of ourselves. To do otherwise is to miss the point of the holiday. The religious enterprise is not meant to be escapism. That's what entertainment is for. Escapism, go to the movies. Honesty, reality, that's what this is about. Even when we face truth and it is uncomfortable, that is the point of coming to services. Reinventing the sacred means developing moral and ethical principles, not based on ancient views, but grounded in what we know about the evolution of our people and our planet. Rabbi Baum did a masterful job exploring the Torah text with us. It's a wonderful text. It's got great stories, just like lots of ancient worlds have great stories. But it shouldn't be our morality. We understand why they wrote those stories, created those stories, what their issues were and what their issues weren't. And to claim that it represents the best thinking of humankind is to shackle us to the past. We have to develop our answers to the moral questions that we face based upon the insights that we've discovered, research and understanding that we are privileged to have, that our ancestors didn't. Coping with life and facing with dignity, it also matters what people say during services. It is not minor. Words are the maps that we use to describe the world in which we live. They provide the framework and the lens to where we are and where we're going. To use the ancient language of our ancestors is like using an ancient map. Ever seen an ancient map? It has mythical islands. It has sea monsters. And it has lots of the world that we live in not described or drawn out. No reasonable person would continue to use an ancient map to chart a serious journey today. No reasonable person would try to rework the ancient map, try to force it against what we know to be real. Yet rabbis give sermons and write essays trying to explain why they continue to use ancient words that no longer reflect the reality that we all know. Why the words that no longer reflect reality are more religious or somehow more authentic. It is time for a change. We certainly can do better. Rather than using ancient maps that no longer reflect the reality that we know, we must use new religious language, a new way that is sure to, so we are clear about what we're saying to ourselves, what we mean, who we are, and where we're going. Using ancient maps that are not accurate and pretending that they are is certainly a prescription for failure, a failure to be honest, a failure to be creative, a failure to be relevant, and a failure to be meaningful. Our ancestors had the courage and the integrity to say what they believed. we have the responsibility to do no less. Infusing religion with scientific approach to reality, approach that reminds us of the laws of nature, pay no heed to our pleas or our prayers. It means that we have to face uncertainty and the knowledge that some things simply are out of our control. Religion informed by science takes on a democratic nature. No longer do we have a few who have the power to tell others what to do, or how to dress, or what to eat, or what to say. An informed religion empowers each person to be full and equal participants, all of us shapers in the religious experience. We live at one of the most remarkable times in human history, if not the most remarkable. The possibilities are limitless. Yet the potential for doom exists as well. Now is not the time for timid religious voices, or the voices of fundamentalists, or the voices who say religion has nothing to offer. Now is the time for religious people informed by human wisdom to speak up and demand that our voices be heard. Religious ideas don't exist in a silo. We can't push out inconvenient facts because they disturb our religious perspective. We must embrace them. The Nobel Prize-winning physicist Steven Weinberg wrote, "If there is no point in the universe that we discover by methods of science, there is a point that we can give the universe by the way we live, by loving each other, by discovering things about nature, by creating works of art." Those that suggest that science strips religion of its majesty and beauty, it's a false claim that's grounded in fear, not reality. The sunset is as beautiful as it ever was, even though that we know that it is we who move and not the sun. The moon is as romantic as it's ever been, even though people have walked upon its surface, and we know it is but a rock that reflects the light of the sun. Love and human interactions are as powerful and complex as they ever were, though we know we evolved from the primal soup of billions of years ago. Religion can continue to help us make meaning of our lives when it is informed by the best of human wisdom and knowledge. It calls us to rise up intellectually and emotionally, to give meaning to our lives. We float in space incredibly alive, says our liturgy. We're probably not alone in the universe, yet we are unlikely in our lifetime to meet others. Thus, we have a responsibility to give meaning and purpose individually and collectively. And our reward, if a reward is necessary, is that future generations inherit Judaism, philosophy, and a world worth inheriting. For we are but links in the ongoing chain of humanity.